Is everyone enjoying their day? Any of you guys want to hop up here and hang out? Go ahead. At least we have some news today. You actually sound better without him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's much more clear for some reason.
Well, okay. I'll just talk. This is just speakerphone, so if it sounds better, then I'll just use this.
Yeah, it does. Like, for some reason, it sounds more harsh for you on your pods.
It's weird because it's like they're Bluetooth like AirPods or whatever. So,
yeah, talk. No, who knows? Anyway, well, it's good news today. I guess we got listing on CoinMarketCap today.
Yeah, we have to shake out some people too, which is always good if you want it to go up. Got to get those hands strong.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, good, like 10, 20, 30% drops are good.
Yep. Redistribution.
And then I think you posted an image of like a exchange that listed what this morning, and another one just posted today.
Yeah,
well,
I hadn't even known. I didn't even know that other one listed. I don't even know if they made an announcement on it. I just saw it on the when I was looking at mining. I saw they had the volumes and it was listed there, but it's definitely new. It wasn't around a couple days ago.
Yeah, so we've got two new listings for some small exchanges. I don't know who all these little exchanges are. I've never, like, who are the users for all these tiny little exchanges? I'm not 100% sure. Have you used a lot of little micro exchanges in the recent past?
I have. I've used Eggex and 7C. I've used all the ones that we had before, just because for this coin or like other micros that I've held or, you know, done stuff with. But I've never heard of the two that launched today, that listed today.
You think Eggex is a good one to have an account on for any reason?
I do. I think that they were kind of a good volume in terms of like shitcoins. They were pretty good before TXBit left. TXBit was like the dominant one out of all of them. And it had the most volume and the most coins, but I think they got pressured to close, and so they closed their doors, and Eggex seems to be picking up all the volume.
Pressure to close from who? What do you mean?
From the U.S. government. They were in their Discord chat, because what happened was one day everybody woke up and saw like their site down, and everybody freaked out. And then they basically announced that they would let withdrawals happen for 30 days, but they wouldn't allow any more trading. And so everybody started exiting. But when you were in their Discord and you started reading all the comments that were being made from the team, they basically shared that the AML, anti-money laundering, and the KYC thing, they got like a letter basically telling them that if they didn't, you know, comply, that they were going to be seeked.
Yeah, I think it's kind of obvious that there's some bullishness for something like a Thorchain, assuming it's Thorchain sufficiently decentralized enough.
It is, but where's Chad at? Where does he live? Is he in the U.S.?
Pretty sure he's U.S., yeah.
I thought so, too. That's weird to me. I was telling a buddy of mine, I was thinking, like, that guy needs to get out of this country.
Like, yeah, exactly. The last thing he needs now is, like, to be dragged into...
Yeah, somebody knocking on his door or something and asking him for, like, private keys or something.
Yeah, well, private keys is one thing, and then there's also, assuming he even has any.
Yeah, but, exactly. I don't even know if that exists. Like,
just I'm not trying dragged to into a saying. Tornado Cash debacle.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, yeah, the last thing you want to have is any private keys.
Yeah, I'm not trying to fight. I have no idea if he has them or not. I'm just thinking, or, you know, talking out loud and thinking about it. I want to ape on more Varun if it does come down.
Yep, I don't know. We'll have to just see how the... like over time, I guess, again, these are sort of attack vectors. That's why I prefer that this protocol is anonymous, another plus side.
Yeah, me too.
I think that the anonymity can be seen as good or bad depending on, you know, where you come from. If you've had like been involved with rug pulls and things before, people say, well, I wish, you know, I prefer a docs team and I prefer, you know, but what are you gonna do? Like, it's DeFi. What do you plan on suing them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the point of DeFi if you have someone that's either an attack vector or whatever? So it says something for trustless systems. At this point, here's a question. Like, how much of the protocol can be changed at this point? How immutable do you think?
It has to be hard fork because it's a POW. So, like, if any changes were to be made, it has to be hard forked. Like,
this would be basically like any change for, of course, a hard fork.
Or minting or keys or anything. Like, anything.
Like, the miners, you would basically create a fork and then, like you would move to the new fork, or how would that work?
Yeah. So, like, when the
let's say there's consensus among the majority of the miners or whatever, right?
Well, there would be consensus among the majority of the miners in the community too, but what would happen is, like, when the chain turned on, like, the minting function, it was announced that it was going to happen, and everybody said, yeah, let's do it, like, in the Discord. And so the devs, like, made a date on it, and then when it got migrated, pretty much everybody just migrated to the new chain automatically. But it definitely was a fork because it has to be changed. Like, everybody has to, has to be changed in order for all the miners and the node to be updated. I think this is the second update too, because we had version 1.0 and then version 1.01. And then now I think we're on like version 1.04.
Like, have you analyzed the piece of Zephyr protocol that connects the part that connects the chain to the price feeds? Because obviously you have to have price feeds for Zeph. You have to have price feed for ZSD,
and, yeah, the Oracle.
You know, you have to have an Oracle in order to basically allow the mint burn function or whatever, the swap function, to work. But who controls that piece of it? Because that's not necessarily.
It's all in the code, and I know that if they look at, it's a combination, or at least from what they've shared, it's a combination of all the different exchanges that it pulls from. So the more exchanges, you know, the better. And if, as long as they update with the sources of it. But
the Oracle's not baked into the actual code, is it?
I think it is. And I think they're going to update it too. Or, like, that's on the roadmap, is to decentralize it and to make it more robust.
So do you have to keep forking in order to update that, or is that?
I don't know if they would have to fork to do that part of
so
it.
That's a
good question.
Oracle, like, information is in the block template and block data. Right now, like he said, it's centralized, but they have desires to move to a decentralized protocol.
Yeah, yeah. There's got to be a centralized computer that runs the Oracle for now. 100%. Either that or you're on Chainlink or something of that nature. Chainlink's issue is, like, it's cool and I like the coin and everything, but it is not cheap to implement it necessarily.
Yeah, the charge too much to implement it.
Oracle calls are fairly expensive. I remember this being a discussion when Anchor and Luna and UST, they were looking at implementing Chainlink and how much it costs and whatever, and it's pretty expensive infrastructure.
There's a bunch of them now too, like Teller and Pipe, or that new one that just came out, and I think Quaint's one too, right?
Yeah, and so some of them might be cheaper than others. Yeah, I don't know if Band's still around. It was kind of.
I think they are, but I don't know if they do anything, like, besides Cosmos.
Yeah, it was kind of like a hot, like, you know, coin pump for a while. But
yeah,
after that, I'm not sure how much functionality it actually has or whether they're actually still building on it. But anyway, whatever. Like, what some decentralized Oracle system would be ideal. I mean, if they're collecting fees from the network traffic, technically what they should do is whatever Oracle costs tend to occur, those should be just baked into the fees of the network, in my opinion. Like, this is the thing, like, in DeFi or in a lot of proof of stake chains, like, there's this kind of impression that, oh, like, you know, our transactions need to be, you know, 0.001% transaction fees or whatever. What they really should be is, like, whatever the value is in that ecosystem, the fees should be substantial enough to maintain the ecosystem, maintain Oracle costs and everything. So that should be a normal expense of doing business on a blockchain. So I think that would be the route they should take, is make it sustainable. Let's say they use Chainlink, for example, then the fees on the network, let's say to mint ZS, you know, mint ZSD or go back and forth with reserve token, whatever it is. Like, if it requires an Oracle, it should be connected with Chainlink or some other decentralized system, and then the charges should be passed on to the to the users to make that functional somehow.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be a good idea.
And Chainlink's made some changes too, where like Link is like a universal gas token thing. I don't know exactly how that implements to a proof of work chain or whatever. But yeah, the Oracle thing needs to be definitely decentralized, because that's a attack vector for sure. You know, if you DDoS, for example, an Oracle, then like, you know, and then manipulate the functionality.
I think there's measures around it, but like they can put like a Sentry node or whatever up where, you know, you can't really DDoS it. So, but I agree with you. It definitely needs to get.
Yeah, I don't know all the like the semantics, but the point is like whatever it is, decentralizing would be good.
Yeah, we do the same thing on the Cosmos side. So I run a validator for Mars, and I set up a Sentry node so that my validator, like, but you know, box my bare metal can't be attacked through DDoS. So what happens is there's like basically a IP that just rolls all the time.
Got it. So you can get around this sort of thing then.
Yeah, like hides it. You know, like it's like an IP under an IP.
Sure.
So there's ways to do it, but that still doesn't stop like other attack vectors, and the fact that like it needs to be decentralized so that if one goes down, there's redundancy and, you know, everything.
Yeah. So I think like that's the thing. Like right now, I feel a lot more confident about Zeph itself because it's a simple mechanism and so it's a well-proven system. I like the fact that most of the wallet infrastructure, whatever, was like forks from other projects. The reason why is because, like, why the hell would you want to reinvent that whole wheel for?
Exactly. It's funny that people think that's fun because it's not.
Yeah, it's actually good because you want like battle tested systems that, you know, you don't start from scratch and then have to audit all that bullshit. And then like then the audit people make a mistake and they miss something. So any kind of open source code that's been out for a while in the wild, more coders happen to look at it or whatever. And hopefully that's good for the system. And like, or hackers have looked at it and have decided to hack previous systems, that would be good, because then you know, wait a minute, this is not good. So yeah, the more that they took from like Monero and some of these other systems as far as wallets, the better better off we are, I think.
We were talking about it too earlier, but there's other opportunities, I think, that are outside of the system that can be built like that. Basically anything that has been built for like Monero, I would believe that you'd be able to do something similar for Zephyr, whether that be like different wallets or like social media applications or other things that you can use the protocol to, you know, basically sign or to be anonymous for different apps.
Yep. I'm comfortable with the idea of like just a simple Monero clone with the addition of this extra tech.
When I'm not talking about like building a dApp on top of the thing, I'm talking about like building a Web2 app that basically just calls, you know what I mean? That like sends queries or whatever.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying like in general, for as far as the protocol is concerned, like I think it's the simplicity of this, relatively speaking, is like a bullish thing for me.
I agree. In fact, when people start asking like why it doesn't have other things, I like it's bullish that it doesn't, like you said.
Yeah, like the more things that can be broken, the more things that can be FUDded, the more attack vectors, whether it's founders or whatever, like the worse off we are. I mean, I think the thing is, so long as small exchanges keep popping up all over the world, like it seems like for governments, it tends to be kind of whack-a-mole, you know, where eventually like, you know, the countries that allow exchanges wherever they may be are much more likely to grow in terms of their user base, whether it's a Thor chain, whether it's centralized exchanges, whatever. And it's going to be whack-a-mole to get rid of all of them. So it's simply a matter of just getting like more and more listings, and then like liquidity just flows here and there. I think the broader question is going to be like, is something change with Tether, for example? And at that point, okay, fine, then you'll have to use Bitcoin to transfer around these different exchanges, because no one's doing anything to that at this point. We know that for sure. So one argument could be made, like if everything's going to go dark, like as far as traditional stable coins, then that's bullish for these types of stable coins, but it's also bullish for like, it would be a use case for BTC at that point, right? Because then you would hold your BTC so you can buy everything else. And that's what it used to be like before Tether came out. I don't know if anyone remembers what that looked like, but you'd basically like you'd use Bitcoin to buy any other new coin that emerged back then, because like that's all you could use. And early exchanges didn't have like a stable coin or anything else.
Exactly. That's what's going to happen too. If anything ever happens to Tether, a bunch of people are just going to go to Bitcoin and Ethereum. Like that becomes the stable coin or the medium of exchange at that point, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Well, that or any number of other substantially high market cap, sort of like store value items. Yeah. So there's a fair number now. I mean, like really, like even things like Litecoin, even things like Dogecoin, even Monero. You know, there's plenty of things that are available that are reasonable stores of value now without having to be only Bitcoin necessarily. If anyone wants to hop up and hang out, feel free. We're just sort of shooting the shit. But the news today is there's two new small exchange listings for Zeph, and there is a listing on coinmarketcap.com, which is helpful for visibility and whatever. Because usually what happens is like a bunch of new people typically don't ape in at the bottoms. They ape in when the price goes up, because on their whatever app they use, whether it's CoinGecko, whether it's CoinMarketCap or whatever, like you get alerts when price movements to the upside, and people tend to like the ones that are green versus the ones that are red, which is probably the wrong like way to look at this. You want to be alerted when things are red so you can get more when it's going down. But people do tend to get things and they're going up because they feel like, oh, look, it's going green another day. And then people say, oh, it's on the way up and there must be momentum here. And they jump on. So it's like very much a bandwagon thing. But yeah, it's good to have, like when you have CoinMarketCap and other types of ways that people discover the coins, it's definitely, again, bullish. It always seems like a lot of exchanges and things list things only after they reach a certain level, though, because because the work it takes to list something, they want to be sure there's like sufficient interest and liquidity. And by that point, they're paying more for the coin, or it costs more to list it because the base value of the token's higher. Because a lot of people want them listed against stable coins, not necessarily against Bitcoin. And therefore, it just generally starts getting expensive to do the listings at that point.
Isn't it funny though how like some of these small, like really small exchanges can list the shit out of a lot of coins, and then we can't get some of the larger ones to touch? You know, it's so hard to get them to do anything.
Yeah, I think the very small tokens are, you know, the teams that build them probably set aside coins for listings and whatnot for liquidity.
Sometimes they do, but like sometimes they just pay like for example, Zephyr didn't give them any coins. They just pay the fee, yeah. Like, they just deal with like stablecoin or whatever. Because if that's been like the criticism with some of these smaller exchanges, that if you give them too much of the coin, they just dump it on the buyers. So,
That's a good point.
Mixi is like one of the worst about that, by the way. So it's kind of nice.
They have been
known,
yeah, for sure. That's why Zephyr did not give them Zeph as payment for like liquidity or whatever. It was only USDT. I think they even showed the transaction in the Discord to kind of calm everybody
That's
down.
Because
there, like you said, there's been several projects that like launched on there and they got given a bunch of coins, and then Mexi just dumps it on them and then it just goes, you know, to shit.
So it's kind of neat in this case where Mexi was like the first to list and got all that out of the way. So we don't really have to worry about the Mexi dump at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good, I was thinking about that. That's one more sort of bullish feature then. The fact that like the dumping exchange and the one you have to like pay money to is out. Because I think what happens is once you're in the top sort of 100 market cap and you stay there for a period of time, like exchanges have a tendency to just feel compelled to list things. And you don't have to, you really don't have to like, twist their neck for it or whatever, twist their arm for it.
Otherwise they're driving business to their competitor. They're just raising the profile of, oh, there's a top 100 coin and only Mexi has it. Like, that's not a narrative I think most of the exchanges would want to have going around, right? The only time I've seen something like that is with Hex, you know, where it had like this astounding market cap and everything was hiding it. but generally, if something's close to the top 100, the other exchanges will want it. KuCoin, at least.
If anyone here uses Kraken, like, how good has Kraken been lately? I haven't bothered to log in for a long time. Like, are they listing a lot of small tokens and things, or are they avoiding most things, or what? Well, now that the SEC is attacking them for, you know, like, putting up unregistered securities.
Jesse got sued twice now, right? Isn't this the second one?
I think so. Interesting. That's the thing, like, because the Zeph team has a, you know, a pre-mine of some kind, you know, I wonder what that implies for the supposed decentralization. That's one of the issues, by the way, in regulations that that was never clarified when people talk about clarifying regulations or clarifying crypto rules or whatever. Like, what actually constitutes a security in terms of token allocation? How decentralized is decentralized enough? Are we using a Nakamoto coefficient? Like, what the hell, you know, what is the actual metric? All this stuff is so confusing. So I think for and what happens if the teams are in fact anonymous? Is it just up to them to stay super secret? Like, and how anonymous is this effort team? I mean, they're playing around in Discord and stuff. So like, how easy is it to find someone on Discord? Or like, what countries are those people actually in that are on Discord? Do they sound like just straight up like English to you?
No, I don't. The English is pretty good. I haven't gotten any like, you know, blaring like things that anything that looks red flaggy or anything. But as far as like, no, exactly. As far as like,
as far as you can tell,
I don't think so. As far as like being on Discord though, you can totally like anonymize yourself by using like Tor and different API pools to access Discord, and so that doesn't really bother me as much as like you said, is just everything else as far as OpTech goes. Like, I imagine that they are just because of what they're doing. I mean, I assume, but it's an assumption too. So,
knock on wood. It 100% helps that, as far as we know, they haven't done any kind of like a raise. As far as we know, they have. They pre-mined some, but then they turned on mining for everybody else, and that's how pretty much everybody else got their tokens. Right? They didn't go around like doing a capital raise. Yep. From VCs, investors, anything like that. So the fact that they kept a chunk for themselves, although it hurts the decentralization argument a little bit at first, as the mining power goes up, and it's already up tremendously, eventually the balance will tip in the favor of other parties. But so I'm not too worried about that. They have not yet, I think, anything that wasn't like pre-sold, seen any successful case against like a proof of work coin.
The thing is, they haven't pre-sold any of the reserve tokens. The reserve token is the one that generates some yield from the system.
Exactly.
Along with mining, and they haven't sold any of that. It's up to the user to decide if they want to play around with that mechanism or not. But that's not a requirement of the system by any stretch of the imagination. Like, you don't have to use that, and you don't have to make stable coins. So I don't know, but the problem with the SEC and all these things is that like they just make shit up as they go to a large extent. Like, you know, what constitutes like an expected, you know, increased return out of income? Is the team's involvement necessary in order to make the coin price go up? Especially if they have to manage like a centralized oracle, things like that. So the sooner they can get onto a decentralized oracle scheme and no longer have to touch the system, I think that will lead to a scenario. And then not only that, but you'd want to use like I would say use Chainlink's new features, because Chainlink's new features have methods to set up where you have like proof of reserves and you have proof of like, I don't know, whatever, proof of decentralization or whatever it is. The idea is like you want to be sure that the central entity, like the owners of the protocol, can't manipulate the price feed of the stablecoin, because then otherwise they could just simply mint themselves whatever they felt like, right? Or at least like they could modify it in such a way that they could front run you. So like at the end of the day, you'd need that to become decentralized quite quickly. You know, how much discussion has there been in the Discord or whatever about that? Like, I haven't followed the Discord because
There's been quite a bit, but now that the protocol is growing, I haven't been able to keep up as much. Like, I used to be in there all the time, helping out with all sorts of different things. And now that I'm on these spaces and everything, and with all the miners that are coming in and all the community, I got in there the other day and there was like 100 messages or more in like all these different categories.
There's too many people in there. It starts.
Well, it's just good. You know, like there's a lot. What I'm saying, I guess, is I just can't keep up with all of it. But I need to go back and look at it and to see what, like, I can search by names and see what people are saying as far as like the devs or different influencers, like the community. Mr. D is a good guy to be in touch with because he'll give you all the updates. Like he was telling me yesterday that he's in the process of almost finishing up the Zephyr Payments website so that merchants can, you know, put it on their website and start accepting payments through QR codes and for the mobile app and everything.
Up, let me make you a co-host for a minute. Maybe you can carry on the conversation with people. I just got a phone call to take care of, and I hope this doesn't disconnect. Yep. But if we don't have a co-host, it'll definitely disconnect if something happens.
I tried to accept it. Did it work?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. All right. Yeah, people have questions or whatever about the protocol and things. Hold on just a second. I'll be right back.
Everybody get some turkey today? You're in?
We don't consume the turkey in Australia. We are not thankful.
What'd you consume today besides if it wasn't a turkey?
It's 11 a.m. and I'm feeling a little bit dusty after going out and being naughty yesterday. So I haven't eaten anything. I've had my morning coffee. I think I'm about to go get my second morning coffee and probably some toast with tomato. I think that sounds great.
No avocado, huh?
Avocado? No, just tomato.
Avocado toast, you know? I'm just joking.
Well, avocado is really expensive. And
yeah, I was going to say, man. You have Zephyr's going down, so I don't know. Are you going to be able to afford it?
No. No, I'm not. We actually had to take some of the food out of the cupboards back to the shops and get a refund. I don't know. The family's out. I think they're hunting and gathering at the moment, trying to get some food for us.
Wife's back? She came back to you?
Well, she didn't really have a choice. Like, you know, I didn't force her. I'm saying, like, you know, they needed a roof.
And I have
a roof. So, yeah. I think she came back when the price started going down. So, but yeah, like some cool listings and stuff, huh? Like this token's starting to like get a bit of attention. I think it's starting to get boring now. It's time to sell and leave.
Yeah, I haven't. I want to ask them if they knew about these listings or not, because I wonder if they were just listed with, like on their own or if the team was working on them.
I hope not. I hope the team's not doing anything. I hope they're sitting back.
I think that Coach Bruce was sort of connecting them to people he knew and giving them advice on how to get the token listed places. And that's one of the reasons they have the pre-mine, is so that they could do that, not so they could dump it per se on us, but so that they have something to give over to exchanges or to lend to exchanges or what they need to do to get it listed different places.
All of this sounds far too smart and far too planned.
Hmm. Well, that is what I've come to expect from Stashikashi not Nono, the main developer of Zephyr Protocol.
You figured it out, huh?
He was smart enough to pre-mine some stuff so that they did have a way to deal with the central exchanges and so on. He was smart enough to get MEXC out of the way first so they can't dump everybody to hell. They were smart enough to combine like two useless projects, the DGED project and Monero project, to become something that actually has a use case, like a value to it, and unique mechanism. So I'm very impressed so far with Stashikashi.
Do you see the GED alliance come out and say that Zephyr already is the number two stablecoin in their entire alliance?
Yeah, I couldn't name the number one. Is it the one on Cardano or something?
It has to be.
Or on Ergo name. Or
what happened? It's either what happened Sigma USD or
I missed that.
I don't know who else it is.
It's a number two.
What?
It's number two stablecoin. Where? What?
On the.
It's a number two alliance. out of the GED, out of the stable coins that use the GED style or code, like it's the second largest now.
Okay.
Which isn't too meaningful. I mean, when you look at the other stable coins out there, they're mostly in the high hundreds of millions, maybe billion dollar market cap, and that we've crossed a million. So that's how early days this is. You know, that it really is early days.
Yeah, I think we'll see how it goes. But like, the other thing we have to have a conversation about up is like, so let's say you get to before we get to all that, maybe Clarity or anybody else have any questions about what we've talked about so far? I was going to pivot a little bit. Clarity, any comments, questions?
Yeah, thanks. I just had one question about ZRS. So I'm trying to convert my Zeph into ZRS. I'm having difficulty. I'm trying to find out like what protocol I'm supposed to follow.
So the only time you can convert is really like when the collateralization ratio drops below 800%. Otherwise, there's not a need for extra collateral. So it won't let you get any. So what will happen is when more stablecoins get minted, collateralization ratio starts to drop, and it might go from 800% to, let's say, 700%. And then more collateral is needed. So long as the collateral ratio doesn't drop below 400%, you can still mint stablecoins. And in the 400 to 800% range, or even below 400%, you can basically mint the ZRS component to it. That's basically the idea. Is that correct, Up, pretty much?
Yeah, that is. If you're inside the wallet too, like the desktop wallet or even the online one, it'll tell you like what the ratio is, and it'll say it has to be under 8.0. And right now it'll probably say like 30.0, and that's just telling you that it's 0.003% over collateralized. So as long as it's under the 8.0, it won't give you that you're exceeding the 8.0 error when you try to do it. So if you've been trying to do it and you're seeing that error, that's why you're seeing that error, is because it's 3,000% over collateralized, not under 800% like it needs to be, like Seffy was saying.
Yeah, we're going the opposite of a death spiral.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the kicker. You can go to non-KYC.io, that exchange, not financial advice. You can go there, and there's a market for ZRS. So there are people selling ZRS for ZSD, I think is the pair. But good luck trying to get somebody.
Where did you see that?
It's so they do have ZRS listed, I think, at non-KYC.io, and then I think it's at another exchange too. But you'll have to find somebody to
asset. How much of a premium are they selling that thing for now?
That's the thing. I think it's like double or triple the price, but it should be, because it's a yield bearing asset pretty much. But
double the triple is a bit extreme. Like obviously, like usually if you talk about like dividend stocks or something like that. Like if you ask yourself, okay, if I pay, double the price for this, what is the yield that's coming off of this thing, and how many years does it take to reimburse for that?
Well, it depends when you get in too, because like a lot of the people that got in ZRS in the beginning, they already like doubled their whatever they put in. If they stayed in the entire time, like it started at 0.5 and it's up to 1 now.
Yeah, and I guess the amount of money you're making from ZRS is pretty good, because there haven't been very many opportunities to convert to it.
Exactly. So and that's why the premium is high, is that nobody...
There's not much dilution at this point, basically.
It's supply and demand, too. Like, there's high demand and no supply, so...
Yeah, but I'm just kind of confused about, like, how... I'm capped. You said 800%, or 400 to 800%. I can't convert it past that. How does it go to 3,000% if it's capped at 800?
Because the protocol is not it's not only collateralized by ZRS, but it's collateralized by the Zeph that's there as well. So if it gets 400% from Zeph's price,
it's also because the ZRS is basically a ratio of the accumulated value within the ZRS token is like kind of a pseudo liquid stake token. And the value of ZRS sort of goes up, like in cash value proportional to the Zeph itself. So what you're seeing is because the price of Zeph has gone up so much so quickly, and the amount of stable that has been minted is relatively stable or like not very much. What's happened is that's why it's over collateralized. It'd be like if your house went up in value like double, now you have double the collateral that you did before. That's all it is.
So the way to get to the point where you commit more ZSD, you either the Zeph price has to plummet like precipitously without any further of the stablecoin being minted, or more people could swap for the stablecoin and app, right? And if enough people did that, eventually, there, if it got to the point where there was a too high of a ratio of stablecoin to Zephyr and then the reserve, it would not let you mint anymore, and people would have the opportunity to swap for the reserve instead, right?
Also, if you like play out the game theory here, it's like everyone knows what Death Spirals look like. You know, everyone knows what, like, you know, that even, you know, 400% over collateralized technically is not enough, in the sense that like crypto assets can drop, you know, 95% from bull market top to bottoms, right? So the thing is, like, when people say, well, you know, this is going to get wrecked, you're stabilizing the coin with your own token, that's not entirely true, because the game theoretic effect is people won't mint the stable because they know this. Or anyone that's going to mint the stable coin at any degree of size is going to say, well, like, I'm only going to mint if the thing is like, you know, 2000% over collateralized or some other, you know, crazy number like that. So that's what we talk about, this being capital inefficient, but that's fine for us. Like, as the Zeph holder, and if like your main reason to own this is for number to go up, that's why I call like this Monero with a sprinkle of stablecoin, as opposed to say calling this like a gigantic protocol where the primary purpose and the only purpose is to like make ZSD the stablecoin of the planet or some shit like that. Like, so when the concept with Luna UST was like, okay, let's get UST everywhere. And they were able to get it on a lot of different exchanges and stuff fairly quickly, as the popularity went up, partly because like people hadn't gone through gigantic death spirals before. So the exchanges were fairly comfortable listing a lot of these things. And then on top of that, you had exchanges list like the ability to short UST and the ability to short. That was like how FTX decided to like wreck the Luna UST system, is like Alameda made a bet on, you know, that basically Luna's value would go down. And simultaneously on FTX, they opened up the ability to short UST and Luna also, so that people can like play this game and support them in the background. They knew they had enough users that this would happen. So it was just a big game. And so here the difference is that you have like a community that understands that this is capital inefficient, but like the exchanges or you know, people that want to mint large quantities of ZSD, like, for example, if you wanted to mint like a couple hundred grand worth or a million worth or whatever it is, you're not going to do that unless there's sufficient over collateralization, probably even more than the 800%. So that's an interesting mechanistic issue up, is that like there may not be that many opportunities to go from ZR to the ZRS token. And it quite literally might be that you have to go buy it at an exchange to get some if you really want
to. And when you think about that. And if you think about it, like, so the ZSD or the reserve is a little bit like a leveraged bet on Zephyr price. And so if you buy the reserve and you're buying it at like a 2 or 3 times premium to what it would be if you could mint it, but if you think that there's going to be still 10 times to 30 times to go on Zephyr itself to reach like $1 billion market cap or something like that, if you're that bullish on it, you think we're really early still, then you could buy the reserve. And theoretically, if Zeph went up to $1 billion, like your reserve would go up and even like an order higher amount of the value of it. And I'm not sure how the math works out, but it's a little bit like a like buying or leverage play. And then if the value of Zeph went down, you would lose value faster too. So think about that.
Yeah, that's, and me personally, correct. Like I've been planning this out a little bit. I'm like, the concept is like, do I really want to be like watching closely with some sort of bot or something when ZRS is actually available for minting, or do I just want to say screw it and just own the Zeph, not to like play games, all that, because there's definitely people that are going to be wanting the ZRS token the minute it's available. So I'm not too concerned about the demand for that at this point.
If you're bullish on Zeph, it might make sense to put like a percentage of your portfolio from Zeph into, especially if you got Zeph at a good price to begin with. So if you bought in early, and if you're up like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 times, then maybe you would put 5% of your portfolio into the reserve.
And go to the exchange and go in and get,
yes,
like buying it outright.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Buy it outright for higher if you're expecting more multiples and you want to add a little bit higher percentage of volatility to it. And at least
flip side to that would be like the ZRS token on a secondary exchange system may not be super liquid either. So like you could probably do it at a small scale, but not very much.
Yeah, small scale. You can't easily do it at size. That is correct. And if you're somebody who, but you could buy small amounts of it and decide like, okay, I'm buying this at a 3x multiple in it, but I think that we've got 20 more times to go. And I'm just going to give my portfolio a little bit extra oomph. If you wanted to do that, you could do that. I wouldn't do it with all of your portfolio. But it might be good to do that. It might be good to do that if there's a big dip sometime. Interesting things going on. And we've been going back up as we talk here since the magic of the space has been bringing the market up.
One thing I was kind of thinking about is, okay, so let's say you get to the top of a bull market, theoretically, or you're in the raging, you know, a crazy phase and, you know, ZEF is running $3 to $10 billion and all that stuff. you know how these things go. I suppose as that happens, you would watch to see how much stables actually get minted along the way, for whatever reasons. And you could watch that reserve ratio and you say, well, look, like so long as the reserve ratio is extremely high, the probability of some kind of weird event happening is just exponentially lower, death spirals or anything else. But, the higher that number goes, you say to yourself, okay, like what is the strategy at that point? Are you in a situation where if you get higher and higher in the market, more and more of folks who don't want to leave their wallet are going to convert to the stablecoin, especially because remember, so some different dynamics are going to play out. Like, so once you have more ZSD listed and more exchanges, what will happen is our bots and things are going to stabilize the price closer and closer to a dollar on those exchanges as people profit off of the volatility of the ZSD token itself. So that's going to happen. And you're going to get closer and closer to like 1-to-1 ratio. And this is what happens to, same thing happens to like Circle when it depegged, you know, USDC. Same thing happens when Tether depegged in the past. People are a bit because they know they can go back to the primary exchange and transfer and get their value. So as this happens, you come along and now you're at the raging bull market, you're at this high market caps. And then you're deciding like, hey, wait, do I want to, you know, sell my token on an exchange where there's a record of this trade having happened? Do I want to be able to convert this into ZSD where there's no record of this trade having happened? Essentially, it's not exactly, I don't even know it's a trade exactly. It's not even DeFi really. So it's like, I don't know what you call that. Because basically there's no actual ledger recording that goes back to you anyway. So I wonder at that time, what the collateralization ratio will be. Will it be so over collateralized that anyone who wants to convert to ZSD will be able to? Or I wonder if like by that point, you know, proportionally more and more ZSD is going to get minted and collateralization ratio is going to stay like in the maybe sub 3,000% range or something like that.
We're so far from it, it's hard to tell, because that would have to do with like, are there actual use cases where people want the stable dollar?
I know what the use case is. Like the most obvious use case is like an obfuscated trade. It's as simple as that. So like, think about like, let's say when the market cap of this thing is in the, let's say billions, like where's the exit liquidity going to come from? So you're going to be like, well, do I go onto different little exchanges where they don't actually have much, you know, like USDT or whatever available to trade, and there's like really high slippage, or maybe like bigger exchanges to take this up, like a KuCoin or a Binance, and then now all of a sudden you have a place to trade? Or do you like just convert this shit in your wallet where you don't have to worry about like slippage issues and you mint yourself some ZSD because it's so over collateralized at that point, you feel pretty good about it? I think that, see, what I suspect will happen is the number of people that want to convert to ZSD within their own wallets at the top of the market is going to be fairly high for all of the reasons I just mentioned. And at that time is when like the dynamics really get interesting as far as like drama. It would be extraordinarily bullish if people trust the ZSD sufficiently enough at that point that they decide they don't even want to go to a centralized exchange to swap out. because then like now what happens is a bunch of people go into the ZSD stablecoin because they don't want to have this transaction shown anywhere. Maybe they'll go and buy back by the bottom or something like that with, with going back from ZSD back to ZEF at some point down the line. Or maybe they would as the amount of ZSD gets increased at the top of the bull market because of this behavior, then the collateralization ratio might drop to the point where, when everyone's suddenly trying to exit to ZSD, you might be able to get that. You might be able to pick up the ZRS token, the reserve token at that point, with that volatility and stuff. So there could be some interesting dynamics that happen. We're seeing the upward dynamic. What we haven't seen is after large market caps, after a lot of ZSDs out there, after the ARBBOTs have all gone in play. And then what kind of options do you have in terms of trading strategy at that point? It could be very different than it is now.
So if you have the stable, if you were in the wallet and you had swapped some of your Zephyr for the stable dollar and the stable dollar loses peck, let's say it trades at 75 cents instead of a dollar and nobody's arbed it back up to a dollar yet.
Yeah, that could be good for you.
But if you have ZSD and it's trading below, and then you go to swap back into Zephyr, will it buy you Zephyr at the price that this is 75 cents?
Yes.
You're getting 75 the Oracle, cents worth of.
Yes, I've looked at that. The Oracle is actually tracking the price of both ZSD, including when it's off peg, and it's tracking the cost of ZEF itself. So it is an Oracle system that's running this whole transaction.
Right. It's so you only get 75 cents worth of Zephyr. You don't get bargain. I'm going to delete one.
Exactly. This is a difference compared to how Luna UST did it, where it's always $1 of Luna for $1 of UST.
Right.
It's not
and
like
the other edge. The other question was, when you do change between Zephyr and the stable dollar and vice versa, does it, is it any kind of a sale that impacts price, or does it just delete some and add the other?
It doesn't touch the price because it does it within the protocol and it mints a stable coin. And then it locks up the ZEF, but it doesn't market sell it at all.
Yeah. It's not like the market module on Luna UST where there's price discovery happening. The Luna UST on the blockchain, there was a actual price feed too that comes from that in a sense. It's different. This is a situation where the ZSD that is minted is considered a liability within the system, and both the tokens are, there's a price feed. So ZRS or ZSD, the stable dollar, is not technically stable. It's quasi-stable. And the trade between ZEF and ZSD is going to be impacted by both of those trading pairs. I would look at ZSD as any other unstable coin for the purposes of trades. You won't get an exact dollar a lot of the time. And that's where it gets kind of interesting, because what will the ZSD price be when there's a sudden rush? There's this gigantic bullish candle, you go from 5 billion to 10 billion or whatever, and the bunch of people oh fuck it, I'm out, I want to sell some. What's going to happen during that dynamic in terms of both the demand for ZSD, the price of ZSD on various exchanges and all that? I don't know what that
it depends though, because if they use the protocol itself, they would get ZEF, and it uses the moving average price too. The spot price. So if they had 100 ZSD, and they have two choices. They can take the ZSD to an exchange and use ZSD pairs, whatever is paired. But what they also could do is just swap in the wallet back to ZEF and then take the ZEF to any exchange and sell ZEF, to go into a different market. So it depends how they do it.
That's also interesting too. Here's a trading strategy then. And this is probably why you see this happening. When the price drops, you see ZSD's market cap go up, the number amount minted. Because let's say the moving average price of ZEF is let's say it's $100, and the price sudden, and it sits there for a while and establishes a new value. But then the price of Zeph drops to, let's say, $70 very quickly, as happens in crypto. Then all of a sudden, what's interesting about that is the moving average might still be at like $95. And you actually may be able to get more ZSD. So like you're able to actually take advantage of the dip because you're able to sell within the wallet in a sense, possibly for a better rate. And that could get really interesting too. And I think this is
the it only uses the moving average. So I tried that. So what I did was I bought, and I'll just say the amount, I did like $250, let's say, in the ZSD. And I knew that the price was going to come down because we had just hit like $3 or $4. It was way a long time ago. And so I switched over and I wanted to play with it anyway and see what it did. And so when the price came down to like $2, I was like, shit, I'm ready to swap. But it was a flash, like it just dropped down quickly. And I had to wait for the moving average to actually come down to stabilize with the price in order for me to like realize the more Zephyr. Otherwise, it would have given me, you know, less Zephyr. And then if I were to try to go sell it, it was for less. So like the moving average, basically the reason why they put that in there is so that exactly what you were saying, so that somebody can't game the system by selling a bunch of Zeph, dropping the price, and then taking ZSD and trying to swap it back to Zeph.
No. I'm not suggesting game it to where you're the one dropping the price. I'm saying that when the price drops anytime, like let's say a 10 or 15% drop happens, the moving average hasn't caught up yet. If you swap from if you swap from Zeph with like, let's say the MEXC price is $40, but the moving average price is still 50, you could convert to stable dollar in that situation and take advantage of the fact that there's essentially an ARB there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. So the interesting thing about this system is, as people realize, okay, there's a game to be played here, then what automatically happens is that game gets played by bots, because like you can bot all of this stuff. Like once you've created a strategy, you're like, okay, I want mathematically this to happen, you know, and like, so long as this is profitable, it's like a MEV bot almost, but it's good for us though. The reason why this is good for us is the more sort of on-chain shenanigans happen that people want to play this game, the better it is for the system. Cause one is you have more transactions, which is beneficial to the system, in terms of fees and for miners' fees and everything else. But the other benefit is, to a system like this, people tend to stay within the ecosystem because they don't have to go somewhere else to do their trades. So if there's whales doing this in the background, that's good because it buoys the bottom price of Zeph. And there's like, so as this thing, it's like, that's what we call like flywheel effects, where like there's reasons why you're sort of trapped within the wallet, in the sense that you want to play the game in the wallet in theory, because there are advantages to doing so versus going back to a centralized exchange. And the more money that doesn't leave the Zephyr ecosystem, the better off it is for the ecosystem as a whole. Now, DeFi tends to capture total value locked or TVL or whatever, because there's lots of other shit to do within the ecosystem. This, it's just like the unstable coin and the coin, like, and the stable coin, and you're playing the game. But like, think about all of crypto right now. Like, what do you usually do? What you usually do is you go and you trade between one coin while it's expensive to another coin that's, you know, a better value at that moment. So like, let's say a coin pumps, you sell it, you get the stable coin, the coin drops, you buy it because the price has gone down. It's like, yay, everyone's happy because it's just simple trading. And you use a stable coin for that trading purpose. In this case, because all of this happens within the ecosystem, there's less and less reasons for people to want to leave the ecosystem. And on top of that, like, because you're in a black box, it's a lot more tax efficiency as well, like basically, to, for lack of a better term. So that combination leads to a flywheel effect of value staying within the ecosystem, I think.
Right. And it'd be interesting to see what develops from it, because there's not per se like a, you're not trading, like you're not buying one and selling the other. And it happens silently. So all you see is like an expansion or contraction of the supply of the stablecoin that will vary up and down. And then the market makers who do serve like centralized exchanges and DeFi chains that end up using the stable dollar and Zephyr for various reasons are going to have to come up with some kind of algorithm or price prediction of how much the Zephyr price should be affected when the stable dollar supply goes up and down. And it's not clear what how much that's going to
My guesstimation is that, like, if you get a rapid dip of about 15%, we'll have to see if this plays out. But my guesstimation is that's when you're going to see people attempting to mint ZSD. And I think that's going to lead then to, like, collateralization ratios falling, and then potentially ZRS being minted, and then, like, back and forth. And I think most people that get the ZRS token, most probably don't want to lose it, because, like, it's yield bearing and it's kind of, you know, it's not kind of the nicer version in terms of people that are in it long term. And I think this flywheel effect is going to just cause the ecosystem to boom substantially. Like, we saw it with Luna UST as well. Like, what was beautiful about it was, because you had a stable coin within the system, you didn't leave the system. That also caused more people to get wrecked, of course, because, like, you know, all your value is within the ecosystem, and, like, the whole chain went to shit. But in this case, the whole chain can't go to shit, because the primary token is basically Monero, essentially, or like a Monero Lite or whatever you want to call it. It's a similar thing.
Externally, though, you can still have you can still have the same problem externally. Like, let's say for some reason there's a privacy, there's a scare, either like maybe there's FUD about, like, the U.S. government is going to blacklist people.
Yeah, you could certainly have this price of ZEF fall for all sorts of reasons, because people decide to sell or whatever for panic or something like that. But my point is, it doesn't break the chain. It's not like
it doesn't break the chain, as long as there's people who want to mine it and have it, and who consider it as having value similar to Bitcoin. You know,
so it doesn't break the chain, because with Luna, the thing is, you could hyperinflate and hypermint the Luna, which also damages the governance system and wrecks the entire chain, essentially, and it basically makes the chain useless.
But the governance system here is the share of mining hash rate, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes. Pretty much.
And so you can't really sybil that the same way that you could do on a proof of stake chain, but, you know, because people would have to spin up miners in order to make that happen, to try to take control of
the hash rate where it is now. I think it's getting safer by the day. So I think if you know, within another 6 months, like, it's going to be pretty hard to sort of, like, game that too much, unless you're actually a mining pool. And in
it's,
that,
it's pretty safe right now, like, nefarious. For the efficiency of the capital we have in the system, in my opinion, I'm not an expert, but I've looking at other chains, it looks like it's pretty efficient and it's pretty secure. But Milo was trying to request, I don't know if I can't accept him for some reason, Seffy.
Oh,
I keep trying to hit the approve button, but nothing happens.
I tried it now too. We'll see what happens. Anyway, but yeah, there's some interesting, like, I think, trading strategy that happens as price goes up and people want to play. Because, you know, like, none of these conversations matter until you find yourself, like, extraordinarily ZEF rich, right? Like, the same thing happened with Luna UST. Like, part of the reason why spaces like this became really popular were so many people became so, like, Luna wealthy, you know, at least on paper. Like, you know, but what happened was, is that everyone was looking for alpha on what to do with their Luna or their UST and whatever. And as a result, they were, you know, hopping all over the different places to try different strategies and things. And there'll be a series of strategies here too. There's a finite list of them, but you'll constantly have people interested in these tactics and whatnot as you go forward. And especially when the money gets to be bigger. So, like, no, like, people don't think of, oh, how secure is my wallet? Have I air gapped it? Have I done this? Have I done that? And then all of a sudden, when the you know, your wallet's worth, you know, a million or 10 million or 100 million or whatever, you know, whatever you have in your bag, like, then what happens is people are like, oh, shit, I forgot to do this, or I didn't do that, or whatever. A good plus side in this case is, because it's a privacy wallet and, you know, most people are just in ZEF, like, or and actually, it's not even staking, really. ZSD is not staking either. I'm sorry, ZRS is not staked officially either. So technically, you can just move any of your assets to another wallet, no problem. It's not like staking where you have to unstake and then move it, and then, like, oh shit, I used my wallet and I doxed myself, or I doxed my gigantic wallet to, you know, to an NFT project or something. In this situation, because it's privacy by default, you know, at least you have, like, an easy way to move wallets, and you have an easy way as far as your assets. And also, you have you're already obscured by nature, so that when you actually do want to spend your ZEF on something or transfer it to a different exchange to sell or whatever it is you want to do, you can do so in secret, which is good.
And the other interesting thing about that is that, if you want to be regulatory compliant in the United States, for example, at least so far as paying taxes, which is the pretty much the only thing that usually gets you in trouble for holding some sort of exotic investment or something that's actually a security, but it was sold to you. Like generally speaking, like there's not really a criminal charge for you as the buyer because the onus is on the seller not to sell you something you're not supposed to have.
For security. So,
but the onus on you is to pay your taxes properly based on what type of a thing it is. So if you think it's a security, you should value it as a security, pay taxes as though it's a security. And that's how you don't get in trouble. And so officially,
any asset that goes up in value that you don't have to manipulate. So let's say, for example, you have liquid staked Atom. The yield is actually accumulated within the token value itself, not a separate like withdrawal you have to make. If you hold Atom by itself, you have to pay taxes on the yield that you have just supposedly made, even though like the value of your tokens are down and now you're paying income taxes. So when you
in this case,
that's based on your income level. So if your income taxes are normally like 30%, well, now you're paying 30% on this supposed income, even though technically it's inflationary rewards and it's actually devaluing the rest of your bag, but you're still having to pay sort of taxes on the income, similar to how you'd pay for dividends in a sense.
Right. This is more like when you went into Anchor on Terra and you were familiar and you got yield. Right.
Yeah.
You also had a value of like your bonded,
anyway, don't go too into the weeds because people.
No, no, okay. But so here, difference here is if you bought the reserve here, the reserve token here, you just get a different price for it based on what conditions are happening if you swap to the ZEF stable dollar or to ZEF itself, you get a different price for it. You don't have a taxable event until you swap in and out of it.
Right. But see, when you're in a black box, like for example, if I buy if I own an ETF token. So let's say, for example, I'm in GLD, which I believe is one of the gold ETFs with miners and all that shit. And you buy GLD. The managers of the ETF could do all sorts of trading in the background, like, you know, add, you know, miners in there and subtract things and add gold or whatever. And none of that gets taxed on your end. It's only when you sell the GLD token coin or the stock in this instance, like when it goes up in value. If it's $100 and you sell it at $200, you have $100 capital gain. In a privacy system, the thing is like technically speaking, the only thing that can be proven is what can be proven because someone can actually demonstrate this actually happened. So in black boxes, there is no like thing that anyone can prove you did or didn't do outside of what's inside your brain or if someone actually got into your seed phrase and could actually demonstrate this. So it's a bit different with this in the sense that like when something is unprovable, that'd be like going into your brain, Grin, and said, okay, Grin has been conspiring to kill Up, and therefore we're based on our evaluation of his eyes and his smirks or whatever. We're going to arrest Grin because he has committed a crime. When these things are completely obfuscated, there is no like your brain is your sort of obfuscation layer in the sense that until we can scan your brain and sort this out, you can't actually commit a pre-crime, so to speak. It's like, so in a black box, like a pure privacy chain, this is unique in that like previously Monero and all the other things, like they could go get the records from an exchange that you traded with a stable coin. But if you swap in a privacy system, which makes this so much more interesting, then what you wind up with is like, it's not really clear what your obligations are. However, let's say you put like $1,000 into ZEF and you're now worth $1 million, and you suddenly show up at the Lambo dealer with $1 million because you converted this somewhere. Then someone's going to say, "Wait, where did this person get this from?" So at that point, if you did not record all of these things, what you'd end up having to do is record it as pure income. You could say, "Oh, it's crypto income. I put it in this black box. It gave me $1 million," and they wouldn't be able to like say, "Okay, you traded it 17 times to get $2 million," because there's no way to prove that. But if the cash shows up in the real world, and that obviously goes to your bank account or it goes to some place where you can spend it, then of course it's obvious that you've got this from somewhere. And unless you want to claim that you didn't, like, unless you claim it came from somewhere legit, people, they'll assume that you got it from nefarious purposes of some kind. And so then there's like, you know, criminal implications, not just tax implications, but where did you get this money, right? Like, did you get it from some crime that you committed? And on top of that, like, did, you know, or you could just simply say, this is like, you know, some crypto income I got, you know, it went in here and I got this, look at this. And then what happens is then you say, okay, well, it was from trading between X, Y, and Z on MEXC or something. And you could basically say, okay, I got this $1 million, but then you would have to pay your full income taxes. Like if you paid, like, let's say your taxes for $1 million would be probably like 39% or 30%, whatever the rate is right now, you would pay that entire amount. So $300K would go to taxes if it just showed up in your bank account. Otherwise, someone's going to go like, wait a minute, like, where did all this come from?
It might not be. It might be advantageous to you if you were taking profit over time into like the Zest stable dollar, but holding it in your wallet. It might be advantageous of you to keep a record of those transactions so you could prove that you didn't make all the income in one single calendar tax year, so that you wouldn't get the maximum tax rate. So.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, exactly. What's the game you're going to play to legitimize? Again, if you have like, you know, $100 worth of, you know, in like 5 years, you have $100 worth of Zeph, no one's going to give a shit, right? These things only matter when they get to a certain scale. And then people are like, wait a minute, like, where did you get that money from and how did you do it? So the reason why this stuff is important now, and it sounds insane to talk about it now, because like, you know, your bags are probably not like they haven't gone to infinity yet, at least for most people. The reason why it's relevant now is because like when they do get really big, you're gonna wish you figured this shit out a long time ago and decided what your personal plan is going to be and what you're going to actually do. You might say, Grin, you might say, well, you know what, if it's worth $1 billion, well, I'm just going to move to wherever, you know, like I'm not even going to demonstrate this anywhere. And eventually I'm going to just move to somewhere that doesn't have like a taxation on this sort of thing. And I will only cash it out when I'm in a location where that's no longer relevant. So that's another option. Then people do that, obviously, like people that are like old school Bitcoin, you know, they, you know, have moved to like Portugal or they've moved to like El Salvador or some shit to realize their gains there. When after the statute of limitations or whatever it is for moving or whatever the fuck wears off, and they feel like they're in the clear. So there's different tactics people use, but like there are consequences to having it go up a lot. And you're like, wait a minute, what do I do with this? And do I actually want to pay taxes on this, or am I going to move? Right. That's
right. And then the game that rich people play is to borrow on their stack instead of selling it.
Sure.
Because if you borrow on it, you don't pay any taxes for what
you
borrow.
And that's another flywheel in DeFi that we don't have in this system, is you don't have a mechanism to borrow against here, especially in a privacy system. Because like how are you gonna set that up exactly?
Yeah, I know, that's what I was puzzling out, and I'll let you know when I solve it.
Well, I mean, what's Chad Barriford had mentioned, like maybe there's a method to incorporate in Thorchain. A Monero, and if you could incorporate Monero, you could maybe put this in there too. But the thing, yeah, and then of course there's some scheme whereby maybe you could wind up with you know, a way to borrow off your asset and do exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, who knows?
I'm sure there's a way to put Monero into Thorchain. I'm just not sure if there's a way to do that while maintaining the privacy. That's the question. So just like any exit point, you know, exactly. You might be giving up your privacy, and that's it.
No, you probably do give up your privacy. Otherwise, how are they going to maintain track of how much you have? So that becomes like an on-chain thing, because you have to verify on-chain how much collateral is actually available if you're going to borrow or like lend off of it or whatever.
Well, you don't. I mean, like, so let's say you transfer from one Zeph wallet. And you make a new wallet and you transfer to that and then use that as your exit point from Zeph to somewhere else. You could do whatever you want. They wouldn't be able to track it back to your original wallet. But once you try to do something in the real world, once you try to buy pizza with it and they need to send it to an address, or you try to withdraw cash or something like that, that's where you risk revealing yourself as at least having one of those wallets.
Bruce said that so long as space is liable to fail because he's not in it.
I think we're doing all right. And I think that the space this morning was just fine until Jimmy the Otter came along and Rama like went unconscious and didn't do anything to moderate it.
Yeah, I hadn't been letting Jimmy come on because he used to be kind of funny, sort of. But now he just like doesn't say anything interesting. Like, so I don't even bother letting him on.
It's just open mic. So like if I follow you, you could jump up and speak. And yeah, I was laying down in bed and fell asleep and my phone ran out of battery. And that's why the space ended.
Yep, yep.
I was going to sleep listening to Zephyr stories. That's great.
Let's see if Slink has a comment. Slinks, you had a question or anything?
Yeah, it was, you kind of answered my tax question, but it's kind of like, now is it worth moving? If you really think you're gonna make it, is it worth moving halfway across the globe?
It would, if it depends. If you're worth $1 billion, it would be. If you're worth $100 million, it's probably yes. It just depends. Like, it just becomes a big ass vacation then for you.
Right. If you think that if you're worth $100 million, I don't know. So it depends on, I guess it depends on what you think you need for your lifestyle or how much you trust the environment of the place that you're in. If the government in the United States continues to move against crypto in such a way that it does make it criminal for you to carry these things under some kind of ridiculous misuse of like a money laundering act, that even law abiding citizens who pay their taxes could be labeled terrorists or criminals. Then
we're just talking about it from just a tax perspective, like how much.
But that this is from a tax perspective. If you had $100 million and you wanted to cash it all out in one go from crypto, and you don't like the rate at which the United States is going to take that money and end up slashing like 40% of it or something because it's such a huge amount that you're going to lose like 40% of taxes or more straight off the top. You're like, I want to be left with $100 million. I don't want to be left with $55 million. If that bothers you, then moving for tax purposes is a lot cheaper to move, right? But yeah,
the beautiful thing about Monero is like you just have to know, like if you have people that you trust explicitly and you have people outside the country, then problem solved as well. So like that problem I have solved because I can go anywhere to do that. So that's a good, having a network is helpful in that regard. But yeah, it depends, for me personally,
I don't know how much it'll matter to me. Like, as long as I don't scale my lifestyle up to like the rich and the famous, if I made $100 million versus $55 million and got to keep it, I don't know how much that would matter to me. Because if I won $100 million lottery,
like, oh, sure.
I would lose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
no, for sure. But still, it's an extraordinarily expensive thing that the sort of, you know, the government gets, but they took no risk to acquire. Right, you took all the risk to acquire it, yet you're paying all the taxes on it. So it's like, it's absurd at some level to the point where it's like, it makes no sense. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, if you're a patriot and whatever, and you intend never to move, and your family lives in a certain place, all that, there's all these reasons why it doesn't matter, certainly. But it's not an inconsequential amount of money. Because think about this, like, that's it, like, imagine it's $100 million, let's say, that you're talking about, let's just make up a number. And like, let's say $30 million would help benefit all your other family members, but you'd have to move to give it to them. It's still worth it, right? Like you know, it. So it's when you're talking about scale money, it's like, you know, things like borders and, you know, where you live and all that shit becomes meaningless noise for the most part, because you can live well practically anywhere in the world if you have a pretty good stash on you. That's not a problem at all. But yeah, at the same time, like, you may not want to. Like, maybe that's not what you have money for, what you care for it for, or anything else. So there's nothing wrong with just paying your taxes and living wherever, just, you know, comfortably.
I guess anyway. What I don't understand for you is, like, okay, you send that $100 million to whatever said country that you have family ties with. They get $100 million. Spread, I'm sure, amongst many different banks and other things that you would do with it. But then what if you need it back and suddenly it's like, where the hell did, like,
yeah, you're talking about repatriating stuff. Yeah, repatriating becomes more difficult.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. You'd become like more of a visitor in your own country at that point. Like, you'd really want to be, your domicile would not come back if that happened. Or you'd create like a trust somewhere. So, for example, a Cayman Islands trust or something like that. And you sort of like send it to that trust and then dump it there. And then that's it. And because you can trade as many times as you want in Cayman, for example. So like, if you want to avoid like trading fees and shit like that, it makes sense to like rent a closet in the Cayman, like, because you have to have a physical address. So a closet is sufficient. It has to like occupy a human like that size. And there's like services that do this shit for you. And you basically like create your little Cayman trust, and then you basically create like a Cayman LLC type of thing that operates the trading business there. And you kind of run it that way. So there's different like little interesting rules for these kinds of things. Now, repatriating the money is a different problem, because if you repatriate the money to the United States, again, that's foreign income tax, and it comes to you personally, not, you know, then it becomes an issue.
So I guess then, yeah, like really, if you would try to avoid like being in California, taxes just suck. So if I like move to Texas, then I just don't have to deal with at least state income tax. So that's like not terrible.
I yeah.
Just pay the rest of the federal.
Yeah, there's different things like that, of course. Like, but anyway, like this is all just like semantic stuff. But it does get interesting as number goes up, because then you start panicking. You're like, wait a minute, I converted from Luna US to UST 600 million times, and I like leveraged on Anchor, and I did this and I did that. Now I don't know how to pay my taxes. Like, so the thing is, on an open blockchain, if you make a mess, then, you know, get ready to start doing some fucking Excel paperwork, whatever. If you, assuming yeah, you're going to bring that money back into the US or yeah, into your bank.
This was a real concern for me. Exactly. In this last cycle, where I could have had probably about $450,000, $500,000 of pure profit at the top that I got for free based on minting like free NFTs and stuff like that. And then, but the problem was, I also had student loans, and I was in a public service loan forgiveness program where like $280,000 of loans are going to evaporate. And I was still making payments on those loans. And if I realized with an NFT, some NFTs, like, you can't do anything but sell it. And so you can't always fractionalize it. You can't always take a partial profit. If you have an NFT that's worth $200,000 and you go to sell it, that's a huge taxable event. It hits your income, and then suddenly you have all of a sudden you've got income for that year of like $300,000-$400,000. Then your student loan payments go up by like thousands of dollars a month, and then you end up paying money. If in a program like what I was in, you would end up paying money that you wouldn't have otherwise had to pay. So you would have like sold that NFT for nothing, kind of. And so I had to let the top pass me by, because I didn't know what the hell would happen to my student loan payments.
Yeah,
which I did end up getting forgiven. Like
when the top of the market comes along, you're like, oh shit, I'm crypto rich. And then you're like, wait a minute, what do I do now? Like, you know, the taxes are going to be a problem, and blah blah blah. And now, like,
so I was trying to organize.
You're
I was trying to organize a corporation. I was organizing a corporation, a separate corporation, and I was going to contribute the assets into the corporation to capitalize it. But I needed a bank account. I needed somebody so that I could get money out, and like I couldn't get this all in place.
It doesn't help you that much, because if it's like a single person LLC or something like that, it's just not that.
No, C corp.
Yeah, if you do a C corp, I suppose, but then you have all those fees and everything too. It's quite
a process. Aren't that bad, but only if you take back out of the C corp. But you can pay yourself out of a C corp when you want to if you own the C corp. You don't have to take your salary.
That's true.
Yeah, and at least it wouldn't have affected advantages. Then it wouldn't have affected my personal like student loan rates, because those scale based on how much you make, right? So anyway, it was a mess, and I missed the top. So second cycle.
Anne, did you have a question?
No, Sefi, but now I can speak to you. So I want to really, really, really apologize for bothering you, like with DMs, like with me struggling trying to buy some Ceph or Maxi that didn't work.
Did you figure it out finally or no?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But I had to make two other accounts, and I had to transfer assets, and I had to do KYC on three several accounts. It was a terrible mess. And so I was bothering you with that. So I want to apologize.
Oh, no sweat. Yeah. It's you just have to play with these things for a while. Most of those exchanges work. It's just like my first email address didn't work. I'm like, what's the problem? I don't know. And it turns out that like that particular, you know, anonymous Proton mail Mexi did not allow, which is concerning. That means Mexi will turn over your shit, by the way, if ever asked, uh-huh, because they banned Proton mail because it's purely anonymous. It's like one out of Switzerland. It's an anonymous email. So like some of those, like that's a red flag for me from XC. So that's why it's like, I'd like more exchanges to show up so that if I ever had to exit from this thing, I don't necessarily have to go through MEXC. I can go through something else in the future. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that's also why I like the concept of being able to potentially use strategies to convert from ZEF to the stable dollar within the ecosystem. So I don't have to leave and go back to MEXC and like have recorded transactions over there.
Mm-hmm. It's okay, Anne. When I watch Mad Money and Jim Cramer says to buy like a fund, I always just email him.
Okay.
Because I have no idea how to do that.
Hey, Noller, what you doing? What you up to?
Honestly, I heard Jimmy the Otter was going to be here. That's why I'm here.
You heard
what? Jimmy's going to be here.
Oh, Jimmy. Oh, no, I hope not. Why? Do you drag him along?
No, I haven't been on Twitter a bunch, honestly.
He's a fun character, but like he doesn't read the room at all. So it's like he's annoying as fuck when he gets involved. And he's not funny to most people because they don't understand his vibe at all.
Nah, I'm honestly just chilling. I have a bunch of extra cash now.
Did your Coogee bag?
A couple of cents here and there, you know.
You must have done well because I didn't have that much in my bag moon. Like I didn't have that much at all. So like I would imagine because you were validating for a while there, weren't you?
Coogee's not profitable for validators. I think like the top like five guys are making money. Everyone else is losing money.
So like what is needed for that to work? Like Coogee's transactions have to skyrocket or something?
Yeah, just more users into the ecosystem, I think, will probably.
So the validators are just kind of like volunteering their time, basically.
Yeah, and it's honestly one of the most.
They get paid.
They don't make money though.
And they get paid to cover the cost of hosting the infrastructure. They're just not profiting.
I don't think. I think the subsidy getting was
A lot of the a lot of the validators probably had a bunch of Coogee.
Everyone that's doing
so long as their bags mooned, they're doing fine, right?
But like the actual validator operations is extremely intensive. Because there is a subsidy, but it's not enough to cover all costs. They're doing their best. Everyone knows, like, hey, if Coogee's going to work, if the validators continue doing the work and perps launches and everything gets up to snuff there, but that's
especially if they build up more like fee structures for the validators.
Yeah, I mean, like honestly, I can compare it to like the other validators we run, like so, like Mars. We literally spend zero time on Mars, and that thing just plugs along. Kajira, you have to be keeping your eye open on it like every single day. Beautiful chain, but really, really intensive. And the main reason for that is because of oracles. Like the amount of price feeds that you have for Kajira to work is disgustingly high. It just needed to run the ecosystem.
Did you pick yourself up a bag of Zeph or do you know what's going on here?
No, I honestly have been super quiet on Twitter. Just been like working out.
I noticed that.
A couple like quiet like business deals, but that's about it.
Yeah, we all kind of jumped into this thing kind of reasonably early, I think. And it's just a really kind of sexy overall mechanism. So we're like, this looks good. And this looks like a good flywheel. It's pretty much certain like more people are going to come into it. Like whether we say something or not, people are going to notice. And now that like it's in the top 500 or whatever, it'll easily kind of climb. So I think it's going to, I believe, I don't know about the rest of you guys, I think it's going to do like a very similar type of thing to Caspa or whatever. It's got the right sort of like mixture of basically a Monero, it's Monero mechanism splash with a little bit of, you know, super collateralized stable coins for, I would say it's like for convenience almost. And I think that combination is potent. For all the sort of reasons we've been discussing, it's like the ability to go back and forth between a stable and an unstable or something even close to that within your wallet with it being completely obfuscated is super powerful. I can imagine so many people that's a strong application for it. And I think that by itself is enough utility. I don't think you need to have I think people are like, you need to have a bunch of ZSD on exchanges and shit like this. I don't think any of that has to happen. I think if there's reasonable price discovery for the ZSD token and it stays more or less close to a dollar or like pegged, you know, plus or minus 20 cents, that's all that's necessary. And I think the internal utility will, or at least the possibility of internal utility of that will drive the the ZEP token up and away. You know, it's very similar to the market cap of at least Monero, that's like $3 billion. It makes sense.
Is there DeFi or anything built out on it? Or
no, there's no DeFi, because it's basically like a simple proof of work system with a stablecoin attached. It's basically Monero with a stablecoin attached to it with the DeGen protocol. It's not that complex, and DeFi is not possible on this at all. Like, it's not designed for it. It's not meant for it. And that's actually good in many ways, because then while you won't necessarily have the lending borrowing flywheel, you also don't have the risks of people looping shit and, like, you know what I mean? Like, where the you get this faux value for the underlying asset, where that kind of thing can happen more in a system that has built-in leverage.
Yeah.
So I think this looks like a reasonably safe system, assuming there isn't some kind of systemic risk of some other kind, that, you know, Oracle risks or something else we haven't fully gamed out. But I think if you just look at the general mechanic of it, outside of the usual kinds of risks that we talk about, like the it looks like it has a good mechanism for price appreciation and why people would want it, and that, you know, this is good.
And Steffi, you keep saying that we don't need to worry about like the millionaire and billionaire games. We don't need to worry about like how to move $100 million and avoid taxes and that kind of stuff. Like, we don't have to worry about that. But there are 65 other listeners in the space, and this is recorded, and we don't know whose ears this is going to reach and who's going to need to know about these contingencies to plan for them, because they're whales and they're thinking of dropping like $20 million into Zephyr over time. And our messages right now may help somebody that ends up helping our ecosystem.
Yeah, that's why, like, you know, good information is good information. Sometimes you have minnows, you have whales, you know. It also helps.
That's why I wanted to talk about inheritances next.
But generally, like, it helps. It does help to put yourself in the mind of a whale. Like, even if you don't have a lot of money, and like, what does a whale want? Like, what kind of features would they want? What kind of trades do they make? What kind of concerns do they have, like in DeFi or in exchanges, for things like slippage? I mean, when you buy $100 or something, you don't worry about things like this. And those concerns are the same concerns that either enhance large whales coming to the ecosystems, buying your bags at some point, or detract from those people doing the exact same thing. So these things are important. Like, how do you attract whale liquidity? Does this ecosystem do that sufficiently? And all of that is relevant. On the other hand, it's another interesting thing is you don't necessarily want a lot of whales in the beginning. You want the most widely distributed, most decentralized mining setup you possibly can. You want the most decentralized early token ownership, where, like, it's better to have 1 million people own $1 of ZEP than to have 10 people own, you know, like, whatever, the $100 million of ZEP or whatever. The point is, like, you want the a lot of small wallets to hold the primary token, not a bunch of giant wallets. And so wallet centralization is not necessarily good. You see wallet centralization in everything from Bitcoin to Ethereum to most of the chains. And to some extent, that's unavoidable because people who know and like the ecosystem tend to buy more of it early on. So even if you have a fair launch, like a Casp or whatever, clearly, like, the early users are much more likely to buy more of it, because A, it's cheaper to buy more coins at that time, but also B, because they're like diehard users. And then later on, larger liquidity that comes in worries that those people are going to dump on them. Right. So that's what prevents some of the growth from happening. Besides the fact that you just need to get more liquidity generally. And as market caps get bigger, it's hard for price to move up. But you also have the problem of people that are going to bring in like $1 billion are worried that, like, some shrimp that bought it, you know, 10 cents, you know, is going to dump on them, which is a legitimate problem. Anyway, Anne, you had another question?
Yes, I saw that OPNX affords longs and shorts of Ceph, Is that the only thing they
Yes. Right. So far, they haven't listed the token yet. No.
Okay. And the other thing is,
I talked to them a little bit about it, but like they've expressed a little bit of interest, but I think they're a little bit more worried because they've had their punches as far as like stablecoin issues, because that's where like UST got that messed up those guys originally a lot. So their appetite for it is not strong, but that's okay. They'll come around eventually if it's interesting enough.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, Grin, I heard you saying about like you have a student loan, and by that there are lots of problems when you have to take your assets and bring them into cash and whatever. There's one thing I don't understand, especially now with this really like expanding of regulations and people looking way more closer into projects than they did before because of the stricter regulations. Don't you think that like a project like especially like Zeph, where everything is anonymous and no one knows who is owning what or how much or whatever.
There's going to be more scrutiny for sure. And in fact, to the extent that like it's going to be harder to get any kind of exchange in the U.S. to list something like this, for example. So yeah, for sure, it's going to affect exchange listings and stuff. But the more decentralized things become, like, so first off, Thorchain itself has two forks. Now, it's not unheard of that someone creates a Thorchain-like variant that focuses on, you know, maybe swapping from, say, Monero or Bitcoin or into Zeph or ZSD or whatever. So that's probable to occur if the size of the market cap of ZSD and Monero is substantial enough and the popularity is high enough, then those exchanges probably get built somehow or another. Even if it sacrifices some privacy, the ability to exchange from one thing to the other and get like assets that you can buy, like Bitcoin, and switch them to something you can't buy, maybe in some country, those are going to increase over time. And they have been increasing over time. So I think the thing with this system is that there have been a fair number of these small projects. Like I think people talk about Haven and a few others that are out there. There's been projects, but like, getting them to be bought or adopted and achieve a market cap of substance has been part of the problem. But it's only recently, though, if you think about it, it's only been in the last year and a half that people learned from maybe like the Luna UST crash. They learned from the Circle USDC DPEG. They learned from like either Tether DPEGs in the past and all of these things. And for that matter, Iron Finance and some other ones that crashed into oblivion. There is definitely a product market fit for these kinds of stables, and there's certainly a product market fit for a privacy version of this.
And even when you talk about the United States,
hasn't gotten there till now.
Yeah. When you talk about the United States and what can and can't be done here, like Kraken lists Monero. They don't have a tremendous amount of volume on it, but they list Monero. And when the SEC took action against Kraken, that wasn't listed as one of the unregulated crypto asset securities.
That's because SEC only goes after securities, commodity-based things where there's no central team and there's no like, there's not much they can do about them. So where
then
those become an issue when it comes to like FinCEN violations and like, what is it called? Like, you know, Homeland Security violations and all that sort of shit, you know?
Right. And the thing is, if you're a U.S. citizen using Kraken, the Kraken
OFAC particularly, yeah, not yeah. mentioned the right one, yeah. OFAC.
Kraken will turn over your information to the United States if you use them as an exit point, but it does give you a place where you can convert, like Monero, for example. So
yeah,
to
Coinbase
dollars.
And
so,
Kraken are required to transmit to IRS all user information regarding like any amount, I think, greater than $10,000 or
$20,000. $10,000.
Some number, yeah. So if you're using those exchanges, then your information is already, you better be paying your taxes or get ready to like, they're going to crack down a lot this coming year.
And that's also why some of these other exchanges that are like non-KYC or whatever, they don't they don't accept transactions of large, of $10,000 or higher, because they're trying to stay out of that range where they would be forced to report to the United States.
Yeah, some banks have created issues for users and not allowing you to like buy crypto and stuff too, which mm-hmm. like they won't let you connect to Coinbase, or they won't let you connect to whatever the exchanges themselves. That's an interesting problem.
It's wild, and that only increases the need for money that you have full control of. That it's totally wild that you don't have the choice of what to do with your money. The bank's like, nope, you can't buy that. It's not good for you. We don't want you using that. But it's also protective for banks, for their system. They don't want money leaving their system either. So it's them propping up their own racket.
There's been a modest amount of sort of congressional support from in the U.S. for crypto on both sides of the aisle. But it's not big enough to like make it to the point where like substantial legislation can actually take place. It'd be very similar to, in some ways, to the abortion argument. Like the reason why you don't see a lot of central like abortion legislation is because like there's so much disagreement with it. It's like you can't even get a law passed because, and therefore it became like this weird Supreme Court thing, right? So same concept, like there's, except a little bit different in this case, like there's not enough people in Congress that care about this to like either ban it or sort of like proactively make a law in the both negative or positive. So you haven't seen anything emerge. So like that, therefore, like what's happened is SEC and all these other organizations have basically just they have just sort of like made it up as they went, and you know, that's expected to happen. Because like, let's face it, like let's say someone uses some system and, you know, does a ransomware attack on a hospital system, for example, and, you know, threatens to dox everyone's records in that system if they don't get paid a ransom. You can imagine, like, the reality is that violence is going to take place there. Like, that, you know, either A, they're going to go after those people and find them and hunt them down, or they're going to, like, you know, they're going to pay these ransoms and things. So eventually, when those things come to a certain head and enough of that shit happens, then the general public screams out to the so-called regulators. The regulators like, what do you want us to do? And eventually there's like moves to ban things and stuff, because there's no way to actually handle the nefarious shit. So the reality is, like, yes, you can do lots of nefarious shit with crypto if people choose to do so. And there's to only some extent can something be done about that. And people make it sound like, oh yeah, I'm just like this, you know, hyper-libertarian rebel. Yeah, sure you are, until you get kidnapped or it's your kids that get kidnapped. And that's when like everyone suddenly, oh, where's the FBI? Where's the you know, CIA? Like, save me. You know, that's how they act when something bad happens. But, you know, so like so many people like act like they're like tough and shit when they're online. Like, oh yeah, I'm like just this cypherpunk, and like nothing can happen to me. Like, you know, and then when it's your kid that got kidnapped and needs to get brought back to, you know, then you're like, oh, how much do I have to pay? And like, where do I pay it? And, you know, which organization is going to help me? How come the FBI is not paying attention? Right. That's how it always works. That's why, like, to some extent, I say, like, everyone's a hypocrite. Left-wing people are hypocrites. Right-wing people are hypocrites. Libertarians are hypocrites, because they're hypocritical until the edge case comes and hits them. And all of a sudden, like, the non-statist becomes a statist. The non-leftist becomes a leftist. And like when you're homeless, suddenly it's, oh, wait a minute, like, how come there aren't more programs for homeless people? You know what I mean? Like, and then when you're and then when you become like rich because you're a capitalist, like, wait a minute, why are they taking my money and give it to the homeless? Like, this political circle jerk happens while you happen to be in like a certain category. And then when the needs of that other category suddenly are the needs that align with you, now all of a sudden you see eye to eye with that group. It's really funny. Anyway, whatever. But Anne, yeah, any other comment or anything?
Yeah, sorry. okay, so you were talking, there was one thing that I was, sorry for my stuttering. Okay, so you were talking like about avoiding taxes, if I understood that correctly. So you can could get your money off the exchange or whatever DeFi thing you have your money on, and you would have to get it on your bank account, but they don't want you to know you have so much money at once in your bank account, so you don't have to pay taxes. Well, isn't that exactly where things are going wrong? Because if you could imagine that, like, more and more people go into crypto, and for us now, it's regulated in Holland, for example. You don't have to mention your crypto assets in your when you're doing your taxes, as long as it's not above 5,000 euro. You don't have to mention it. But,
wait, what's your point? So you're worried that the government won't work because they're not making enough tax money, or what?
Well, if
you're saying everyone's doing it, so therefore, like, there's not enough revenue, there's always a way they're going to find a way to get revenue out of you. Like, assuming that you want roads and airports and, like, fucking, like, you know, like,
yeah,
whatever. Like, the reality is that, like,
they can care of all this. Yeah, but
a zero tax world would get very interesting very quickly. I suspect it would be probably quite miserable.
I think
if they really had trouble collecting income taxes, they could just increase sales taxes, and there's nothing that you could do to escape it.
Exactly. that's precisely what happens. That's like why in Europe there's a VAT tax and stuff.
Yeah. Taxes is tough to talk about because none of us are accountants or CPAs, and there's everyone across the world. We should probably talk about something else, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, really. Anyway, yeah, nobody cares about this. Like, but anyway, the nuances of the protocol, I think, definitely, like, there is a flywheel effect, because I can see the people who'd want to be able to move in back between ZSD and ZEF tokens back and forth in their wallet. And that in and of itself is a reason why there's going to be groups of people who adopt this for that function, if nothing else. Like to me, that's super interesting. Like, I can't do that anywhere else. So like this is even more simple than ThorChain. Like, think about it. Like, if I want an unstable asset that I want to speculate upon, and I want to do it in a way that I can trade to a stable coin, you could do that on ThorChain, I suppose. Right? Like, you could do that. But the difference is, it's not obscured in any way. Here, I don't need to take any of ThorChain's risks, meaning, like, whatever risks that, you know, hacks that ThorChain has had in the past. And on top of that, it's anonymous and private. So I can do whatever I choose to it. You don't think that's going to attract tons of users? Like, if ThorChain got a bunch of users, this most definitely will, for a lot of the same, maybe some of the same reasons and maybe some others. But that's kind of my theory up. Like, does that make sense to you?
It does. I was going to ask you, when you were at Thanksgiving today, did you get to show anybody or educate anybody on Zephyr?
No, I've been working the whole day. I work up early, and I had to go all over town and work everywhere. And then I got home and
Really?
Ate a little bit.
I've been shilling it all day. Shilling really? Zeph all day.
To who?
Zeph to the moon.
To the moon.
Moon. Lunar. Luna.
You've been shilling all the way
up. Yeah, were you showing to your friends and family or something? Or who were you talking to about?
I was just like my imaginary friends. Yeah, just shilling to them. My buddies.
Macro trends in the audience.
My cat really wants to buy some Luna. I mean, sorry. Zeph.
in the audience, there's a macro trend said you can go to Kraken, to Mexi, to your Zeph, to Zeph Wallet 1, then go to Zeph Wallet 2, then go to Mexi Account 2, then to USDT, then to Ultima Pay debit card off ramp. That's the way to go. But the thing is, like, some of these debit cards, they don't work internationally, I noticed. So you have to be careful with these various debit cards. They're not all the same.
They charge you like a international fee too. So, like, and those are fees that you get after you charge. Like, they don't tell you up front, like a Uniswap thing. So heads up to people.
Yeah, but Visa and MasterCard debit cards, they vary in terms of like where they're useful. So for example, I had a debit card that I tried to use for gas stations in some parts of France in June. And it wouldn't work in certain places for no apparent reason. It's a Visa MasterCard. For that matter, not all of my credit cards worked at every gas station either, which is interesting. So fortunately, I had more than one. But the point is, like, just because you have this one card loaded up, you're going to roam around Europe or some other country with it, doesn't mean it's going to work there for sure. So you have to be careful.
Like being an electric vehicle owner without being an electric vehicle owner. To find all the gas stations that accept your card.
Exactly.
That'd be terrible.
You got to be able to plug the thing in somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you got to find the gas station that takes DSD, man. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, there's also, like, I think the gift card route's good. Like, Bidali, is it bidali.hq or something like that? BIDALI, look it up. But like, you can send Adam there and a whole bunch of other things. So it's simply a matter of like swapping to a stable that you can then send to this thing, and you can then go get like Amazon cards or, you know, whatever. Apple, you know, usually Apple gift cards are good as gold, because odds are if you're an Apple fan, you're probably going to buy something from them. Or like if you're a Google fan, you're going to buy something from them. Or like, I don't know, you know, you might, you know, like load up a Netflix card or some shit, and then or whatever it is, and then like get a subscription for the next few years or however that works. So yeah, there's definitely some places that like if you use certain things, you can dump them onto cards and use them. Like an Amazon gift card's pretty much as good as gold, as far as I'm concerned.
So smart. Wow.
Like if it's going to be something you're going to spend on anyway, you can just dump it onto one of those and just use them over time. No problem. Like there is a certain amount of gift cards you that like Amazon or whatever allows you to like plug in at one time, because you bring in too many, they think you're doing something nefarious. So like you have to limit that. But that's why it's good to spread it out among a few different things that you use, like maybe an Apple, maybe a, you know, whatever. In America, it's like Best Buy, and you know, like if you like Starbucks or some shit, get some Starbucks cards or whatever it is. That works pretty well. Anyway, that's just like off-ramping ideas if you had to do it. But it'd be nice if like, if ZSD is available more places, then you happen to be able to like, you converted to ZSD or something because you found a good ARB on the platform with a good rate, and then now you converted, and now you're like, okay, what do I do with this? Like, you could technically send it to a separate exchange that has the trading pair, and then convert it to something that then you can send to the gift card of your choice. That's kind of nice. And then like I've spoken to the Bidali people, so they might, if I suggest like, you know, like please add Zeph to it, they might do it if they find that there's enough traffic. I think that most of those platforms, the issue for them, I think, is like building a user base is quite difficult. I think they were doing well when like Luna UST was doing well, because so many people got sort of Luna rich and were using that platform. But then when that crashed, like, and then we went into a bear market, I think people, you know how it is like in a bull market, you're like, oh, I want to live my whole life with crypto. I want to buy things with crypto. I want to pay for things for crypto. I want to sell things in crypto. Like people act like they're going to become like these Web3 magnates or some shit, and you're going to live off the grid. But what happens in reality is like in bear markets, all these different infrastructures people put together, it's kind of sad that like they drop in traffic big time, and people's like desire to do crypto shit goes down a lot more than you think. But yeah, in the euphoria stage, people are like, oh, I want to mine crypto and I want to do this and I want to do that. And then when the bear market comes, like nobody's showing up to do anything, which is super interesting.
I was just checking out the ZSD market to see if what it was doing on CoinGecko, and it looks like somebody was arbing it, because it was above $1.30 for a little bit, and now it's down to $1.05, excuse me. So somebody's taking advantage of it. There's been $1,000 traded today at non-KYC with ZSD.
Yeah, because if you have a substantial enough difference between the if it's off peg by like 30 cents or something, then yeah, it might actually be worth it. Might be worth converting some ZS, it might be worth converting some ZEF to ZSD, going getting the free 30% by selling
or it, or not even using your stack time. You could just go purchase more, like if you know what I mean.
Yeah, just you can purchase it, more. Yep, you could just arb it and purchase more. Exactly. So yeah, there's some games you can play if you are willing to play them.
I have a question.
I don't know how much liquidity is there, and how much like
that's what I was saying is that is. So on from Zeph to ZSD, there's $1,000 of liquidity, or there was $1,000 of volume. There's, I don't know how much liquidity is or there is either, but it looks like the depth is not very good. Like the spread, it's very illiquid.
Yep. Yep, Starcaster, what's up?
Okay, so this might be sound like really weird, but yesterday when Seppi was the host, you had a completely different accent. Why are you like, where'd your accent go?
Oh, she thinks you're Bruce.
Yesterday you were like stunningly sexy, and today I'm a little bit turned off, and I'm just not sure what's changed. Have I changed?
All right, buddy, I need to know if you're playing me right now, because as I have bought this coin, I'm also questioning Seffy. Who are you?
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know.
I think she's fucking with you, Steffi. Watch out.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, if I'm here, we get one audience. If Bruce is here, we get another audience. And if the two of us are here, like, everyone shows up for some reason. Like, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing. And that's what happens every time. That's why Bruce just said, I think he's busy for Thanksgiving or some shit. So, like, he's like, oh, this space is going to fail because I'm not there. I'm like, whatever, loser.
There's this principle in like Taoism. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably it kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web 3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up the bank accounts, forgetting how to fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code, and now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Is it really worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
They started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out. Teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits. All you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we'd call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile, over here rewiring features. More critical thinking, huh? Less knee-jerk, more evolution, less shit. Coin preachers pretending to be teachers, y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Terror Spaces.